Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is February 19th, 2015. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is pricing energy. The price of energy affects everything. If you want to understand the financial system as an ecosystem, the economy is a living ecosystem, just watch the price of energy change a lot. And it ripples and boomerangs through everything, whether it's driving the Russian economy into recession or setting up the oil and gas independence to be picked up and picked over by the large companies or by their banks if the large companies don't pick them up. In appreciation of the consolidation underway, we see the Chinese announce its intention to consolidate its state-owned oil companies so they can be as big as Exxon. So get ready for that. It's offering a lot of relief to people all around the world and companies, to commuters and transportation companies, farmers. And to see the dramatic relief on the cost side of the equation, it's a reminder that our dependency on fossil fuel is extraordinary. Approximately 87% of the world's energy is provided by fossil fuels. And although we are developing alternatives right and left, the global demand for energy is also growing. So whatever is happening behind the scenes with new technology, the reality is that our entire production and distribution globally depends on oil and gas. It's a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure. It's enormous. It's not something that changes overnight. However, the thing that can change overnight, if technology, really breakthrough technology, becomes mainstream or moves across out of the laboratory, is that it has to be more significantly more productive than oil and gas, is stock market valuations can change very quickly, which is why I spend so much time watching this. The stock market is always about future flows, the present value of future flows. So I like to stay abreast of the current developments, and one of the people I most look to help me do that is industrial scientist Joel Garbon, of course, who's our interview tonight. It's a great interview and someone who can really – you can look to help you understand this part, this aspect of our world. Well, money and markets, the Germans said night to the Greek bailout, and the Greeks finally dropped their demand for a bailout settlement, and they're headed back into negotiations. I now think the chances that Greece will leave the EU are up to 60%. There are a lot of people other than the Germans, including the French, are going to do everything they can to keep them in. If they do exit, their first step is going to be to try and join another currency, which is likely to be the dollar or the ruble. Or, of course, they can go back to issuing their own. Here's the problem. If they leave the EU, the entire EU and leaders in the EU will have every reason to want to do everything they can to make sure it's an incredibly miserable experience. Another reason why they would want to come under somebody else's umbrella. They need to give a clear signal to folks like Portugal, Spain, and Italy not to get any ideas. So if Greece leaves, you have all the powers of Europe who have incredible incentive to make sure it's a completely miserable life after the EU. Anyway, if by any chance Greece does leave the European Union, I say the European Union and the euro will hold, but it's just going to be more good news for the dollar. All reports say the Ukraine truce is not holding, and I can appreciate if the people there understand what the IMF deal is doing to them immediately, and I think they're probably figuring out pretty quickly. You can see why the Ukraine troops may not want to fight so hard. Sam Smith had a great editorial. We'll post on the blog tomorrow. He said, if you watch what's going on in the Ukraine and look at the terms and conditions of the IMF loan, you understand the real problem is really about corporations versus nationhood. And I think it's a good way to describe what's happening, so long as you define it as the empire corporations, not necessarily all corporations. Weather was on lots of people's mind. It certainly wasn't here in Tennessee, where we are dealing with just an incredible amount of ice and relative cold. The East Coast continues to get pummeled by snowstorms. Where I'm in Tennessee, again, we've been sliding on the ice. We have We shipped some of our annual wrap-up books early by FedEx and sent those out to the wonderful subscribers who subscribed as part of the offering. But the big order came in on pallets, and it was shipped from the printer last week, arrived at UPS Ground in Memphis on Monday, and we're told it won't be here until mid next week. That's 10 days to go 50 miles. I can't believe it. But I shouldn't complain. The latest reports from San Paolo is the water shortage there is so bad. They're being hit just like California. The city says it's going to have to start asking people to leave if it continues. Markets. The Fed's discussing interest rates for the last couple of days, and that has the long treasury and bond markets spooked. It's now flat. Long treasuries and the bond aggregate are now flat for the year. S&P are now evenly matched up about 2%. That means gold came down. It's now back at 1206, hugging the 1200 line again. Emerging markets are up about 2.85%. A lot of that's China and India. China's up 3.5%. Europe is now the star. It's up 5.9% for the yield. And you only have to ask the question, guess who is engaging in the greatest quantitative easing? Lots of pressure now on China to devalue the yuan and break the peg with the U.S. dollar. China's trading at a PE of 10. The U.S. is 18, given that China's growing much more than the U.S. Watch. I don't care how much you say China's economy is slowing. A PE of 10 looks very attractive to a lot of investors. Everywhere you turn, you hear talk about how well the U.S. economy is doing, but it's hard to see it from the signs. Now, of course, that depends on where you are. When you're out in Silicon Valley, it looks like it's going gangbusters. But the Fed has reported increases in defaults and non-performance in both student and auto loans. A couple of articles this week saying we have subprime debt growing and indicating this is a sign of recovery. As ridiculous, it's not. The people who are struggling can now borrow, but they're borrowing because they're broke and they need to buy a car, they need to buy food or healthcare services. There's several interesting signs. Walmart announced they're raising salaries for 500,000 workers, and I bet that's a top-down effort to kind of get incomes up. It's an indication, it's sort of bottom-up juice, arranged top-down. The Port of Los Angeles, very interesting story if you haven't keyed into it, is still experiencing a slowdown strike. Very ugly. This is being allowed to happen in my experience. You pick up the phone. If Mr. Global picks up the phone and says strike stops, it would stop tomorrow. So my read is that this is a way of encouraging Buy America. In the currency wars, the U.S. right now can't lower the dollar. It could if it wanted to, but it would be difficult, but I think it doesn't want to. So the question is, if you can't lower the dollar, how do you play the currency wars? You can shut down the ports. And what that's going to do is give a signal to everybody in the U.S. that the supply chain is has more and more risk involved, and it's going to cause more and more people to insource their purchases, arrange their manufacturing back into the U.S. So, if I'm a distributor or I need a part, it's going to be much easier to pay a little bit more rather than run the risk of supply chain problems. And as the U.S. continues to fight a losing battle as the Bretton Woods system unravels, we talk so much about it in the wrap-up. I hope you really do get a chance to read and digest this if you haven't. But as the Bretton Woods system unravels, there's an accelerating push to increase domestic self-sufficiency. We've talked a lot about that increase in energy and in food and in manufacturing, but this is just another signal. So while Honda cannot get the auto parts through to its plants from Japan, the one thing that we can't get into this country, no problem, is people. The administration, continued concern about immigration along the border. We see a judge rule this week in favor of the state of Texas and 26 supporting states against the administration's informal policy to give residency status to 4 million illegal immigrants. So the fight continues. What's interesting is we're now beginning to see the states do a much better job of organizing and have drawing real support from their political base. So they have real bottom-up political support. They're getting together and organizing. So this time it's immigration, but the war on drugs, we've seen a lot of action. And I think this is going to continue. We even had Ron Paul give a speech the other day talking about, you're going to hear a lot more about nullification and succession, because the states, you have a lot of very powerful state legislators who've kind of had it with this. After noticing a significant increase in the HUD appropriations in the president's proposed budget, I thought I would take a look at the detail, because I figured something was probably going on vis-a-vis the immigrants. And sure enough, here's my read after taking a hard look at the HUD budget. It looks to me like the Democrats are planning on using HUD to buy a significant number of votes with HUD subsidies and first-time home buys, buying really easy credit within the immigrant population. And here's my prediction: when the Tea Party folks see the amount of money that the Democrats are going to pour into the young immigrant population, there are going to be some pretty upset folks. This is going to cost more than a few strokes. I think it's hard for hardworking Americans to see that kind of money poured into to people just to buy votes. So it certainly goes against the grain of, you're talking about a very negative incentive system here. But anyway, what they're going to do is they're going to buy a lot of votes for the presidential election. But what they're also going to do is use that process to kickstart the home building market and home building stats. And that means you're going to get a lot of broad-based support from the mortgage bankers, the home builders, and the realtors. So expect this to go, but hold your nose. One of the most interesting things happening in the mortgage market this week was veteran reporter Gretchen Morgenson of the New York Times has been writing about the mortgage bailouts ever since the bailouts, and she's done a remarkably good job. She keeps steadily stepping towards the truth, but never quite arriving there, because it's probably much more overwhelming that she's ready to face. Certainly can document as the kind of investigative reporter she is. So she's really got to get the documentation before she can speculate. Here on the Solari Report, we can engage in high octane speculation, but you can't do that if you're an investigative reporter at the New York Times. So she's got a new article on litigation. One of the shareholders sued with regard to the Freddie and Fannie takeover by the U.S. government, and the U.S. government will not disclose a whole bunch of documentation on the events. They're demanding secrecy, saying it would compromise the financial markets, and the litigants and Morgenson are saying, how can it compromise the financial markets? It was years ago. Interestingly enough, in this case, I believe the government's right, because if you dig in and look at what was really going on, then what you're going to have to face is irrefutable proof that the U.S. Treasury, the New York Fed banks, Freddie Fannie, the Department of Justice, and a few other critical parties in the financial system were engaged in massive securities fraud. So when you need $27 trillion to bail out mortgages, when mortgages, all the residential mortgages in the country could be paid off with $8 trillion, you know there's something going on. Anyway, it's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see how far Morgenson gets on this story. I hope she gets all the way. That would be miraculous and wonderful. Two stories I put up on the blog. I just want you to think about it. The internet of everything, or the internet of things, and getting every appliance and every piece of furniture and every light fixture in your house, getting all of that stuff on the internet, is really a home invasion that sets your home up to be a reality TV show. This is pretty dangerous. And there are two blog posts I put up just to get the chilling sense of the thing. Samsung, God bless them, put out a warning about their TV saying not to discuss personal information in front of the smart TV set, because that information might go back to Samsung or third parties. How about that? And then a Barbie doll that is now connected to the internet and can talk through the internet. So you can imagine, entrainment, subliminal programming coming to your children through your doll, or your children's doll spying on you. Anyway, very chilling, but take a look at something we all need to know about. The gruesome vaccine campaign continues. It's deeply offensive. And a U.S. attorney did a detailed write-up of the Italian court decision last fall that concurred that a boy's autism was created, a young man's autism was created by vaccine. It was vaccine-induced. So I posted that because I'm just so sick of the vaccine campaign. But it's one, you know, sort of one example of why it's so important for health freedom that we network globally, not just in our state or in our community or in our country. We're going to have to network globally on this, and there are lots of allies all over the world. God bless that Italian judge. In some ways, the most important story this week, the one I spent the most time sort of looking at, thinking about, and there was some chatter on the blog about it too, was there's a real meltdown going on in the corporate media. I think a lot of it relates to the push politically to promote ISIS as a legitimate factor, which it's not, in my opinion, but to create the conditions to go to war and to promote more war in the Middle East. So let's call this the Shriek Aminer kill zone, because while the J.P. Morgan bankers were dropping like flies in New York, as I discussed last week on the Salieri Report, we've had a series of deaths. We had Bob Simon, veteran CBS news reporter, who was well known for covering overseas conflicts. He covered almost every one over an almost 50-year career at CBS. He was killed in a car accident in Manhattan. Among his experiences, he had been a hostage in Iraq, so he had hostage experience at the same time. And Ned Colt died of a stroke at the age of 58, young to be dying of a stroke. He had also been kidnapped during the Iraq War. So again, had hostage experience. Then David Carr, the New York Times, died suddenly after interviewing Edward Snowden. He had been ill. Bob Hager, who was the NBC aviation expert, did not die, but he was in a head-on crash. He lived, his wife was hurt. Of course, Brian Williams got run off of the air for lying about the Iraq War and other things. We now see today Bill O'Reilly, the headline, Bill O'Reilly blasts disgusting report claiming he misled viewers about war reporting. So what you're seeing is you're seeing the old guys taken out. I suspect some of this is just the young guys taking out the old guys. Old guys are expensive, so part of this is saving money. But I think also what you're trying to do is anybody who's got the knowledge and clout to push back on the ridiculousness of the ISIS reality TV show, you basically want to get them out, or you want to make clear to everyone that they either toe the line and you know, say whatever is on the teleprompter, or they're out. We see Jon Stewart resign. I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but there's a house cleaning going on, and you're going to see a whole new world of people who are far less expensive and much more obedient, and ready to play ball on the business. And the business is we've got $1.7 trillion in weapon expenditures and military expenditures globally, and no enemy. And so the need to create an enemy has never been greater, because the whole military-industrial complex is pumping around that $1.7 trillion and trying to get a justification for boots on the ground. And believe it or not, if you look at the polls and the reports, ISIS has been incredibly successful. One of the reports from ABC was U.S. intelligence officials are analyzing facial features and speech patterns of the leader in the video that had the gruesome execution of 21 Christians. And they say that this guy may be an American. He sounds like an American. Anyway, I wonder what's that about. And then General Wesley Clark says ISIS got started through funding from our friends and allies. No kidding. Anyway, the biggest sign of this meltdown finally was Peggy Noonan, who is an editorialist in the Wall Street Journal, who I think is quite good for someone in the mainstream, wrote a column about Bob Simon, a fairly long editorial, and I wanted to read you the end of it because I consider this very significant. America is hungry for authenticity and honesty and fiercely resents its absence from places where it should be. A longtime reader of this column, age 84, emailed recently to say the heartbreak of his life the past few years has been witnessing the daily corruption of all information, the rigging of numbers and claiming of facts, the scientific papers that manipulate data to advance a political agenda, the misleading government statistics. We're drowning in lies, he said. That is not an exaggeration. Now, this may seem like a little thing, but for Peggy Noonan to basically say the whole system is a lie, that's big stuff. And I will say this, Peggy Noonan has now arrived at where I was in 1998, 1999, that had me walk out of Washington, say I'm out of here for good. You know, I'm walking away from the establishment, this group of people and this system has nothing. You know, there's no righteousness at the core. There's something rotten at the core of the system, and I'm out of here. So the fact that she's reached that point is quite interesting, and that's the basis. When people who've been playing ball this long, no matter what, start saying these kinds of things, then you know we're at a tipping point, or we may be coming into a tipping point. I put up an important warning in the blog that I wanted to just bring to your attention. The Campaign for Liberty in Montana had put out a notice warning people that there was an effort to legislate for a constitutional convention. I don't know if this is coming up in your state. I don't know if this is a broader effort. Please be very careful. If enough states call for a constitutional convention, we could get one, but I assure you it won't be for the purposes that the state inspired it, and it won't be under the control of anybody reasonable. It will get hijacked by Mr. Goebel and used to basically strip your and my constitutional rights. And that should be a matter of concern for everybody globally, because in fact, the Constitution, no matter how much it is ignored and kicked around, is a huge dam stopping a lot of crazy stuff. So this one is very important, and I would really suggest you take it to heart. Our hero this week are a group of Swiss scientists. We had the article up on the blog. They're from Ecole Polytech, Technique Fédérale de Lucerne, and they have made a solar panel with 60% efficiency. Now, they use graphene to do it, which means it's unbelievably expensive, so it's not economic yet. But if we can get solar panels to 60% efficiency, then we're really talking about solar competing against coal, and add good batteries, as people like Elon Musk and other people are talking about. And boy, you could really start to see solar make a big difference. And I wanted to give two nods. One to the city of Portland. Article will go up on the blog tomorrow. Portland is now generating hydropower in its water pipes. Talk about stacking functions. That's a good one. And a nod to Eddie Murphy, who was invited to do a gig on Saturday Night Live that was a hit on Bill Cosby and said, nope, he didn't want to hit a man when he was down. Thank you, Eddie Murphy. Okay, Ask Catherine. I enjoy listening to Catherine Austin Fitz's comments when she's a guest on Coast to Coast. I value her opinions, especially about financial markets. The Port of LA is backed up due to some orchestrated slowdowns. I've read that the average dock worker there makes $100,000 a year, but then think most of the laborers likely make much less. Does Catherine and the Solaria team see big trouble this quarter from this event? Do they think it will get worse and affect retail nationwide? I'm in Canada. I wonder why some of those ships don't try to sail north and get unloaded in Vancouver. I, frankly, would love to see a list of who's getting through and who's not getting through. But it's, again, I think this is part of the Buy America campaign. I don't know how long it will go on for, but it will go on as long as it's good for the Buy America campaign. And it would surprise me to see a lot get moved up and unloaded in Vancouver. Although if I was the guys being stayed, you know, if I was Honda, I'd be sailing for Vancouver now. Another question. The vaccine industry tells us that a major reason we have measles outbreaks is because all of the people who haven't been vaccinated. But if getting vaccinated is supposed to actually prevent someone from getting measles, isn't their argument kind of like saying that drinking orange juice with vitamin C will help you to avoid a cold, but only if everyone else around you is drinking orange juice too. I agree. If you're vaccinated, what do you care if somebody else is vaccinated or not? You're supposed to be protected. I'm not an expert in this, but I'll ask around and see if there's a scientific reason for this, what seems to me to be a ridiculous position. Then there's another question about poisoning, which I'm not going to answer because every time I talk about poisoning, I have to put up with so much attack and smear. What I will say is that poisoning is an extremely common covert op. It's much more common in business, much more common in minor situations than you think. It's used by the secret societies. It's used by the intelligence agencies, both public and private. It's just very, very common. They do it a lot. And, it happens a lot. So a lot of times when you think it was food poisoning, you're going into an important strategic meeting, suddenly food poisoning, and someone else gets to lead the lead the presentation. So it's, believe me, it's unbelievably common. I spent a couple of one year reading as much as I could get a hand on poisoning. And anyway, it's a very gruesome topic, but it's one you need to be cognizant of. And if you get sick at a strategic point with something that you think is food poisoning or something like that, don't be surprised. You really want to consider poisoning as something, again, that's much more common than people know. With the technology available to Mr. Global, can he control the weather? If so, is that what is behind the drought in California? I believe Mr. Global can control the weather, but I couldn't prove that in a court of law. That's just my two cents, as Dr. Farrell would say. It's my high-octane speculation. Very interesting. I did the Rent Show on Monday and asked Jeff what he thought was happening with the drought. And he spent more time following Fukushima than anyone I know in the media. And he said he believes that the essentially the U.S. government and military is implementing high-pressure systems off the coast to keep the rain from coming into the western United States to protect the western United States from radiation. The idea being the rainfall would just sort of dump the radiation on the land. That is the most logical explanation I've ever heard of for what's happening in California with the drought, because it strikes me as being very unnatural, and to protect against Fukushima is a very logical reason. He's very angry about it. He thinks the powers that be should tell the people. I agree. So, but there's no doubt that honesty in a situation like this could have a very dramatic impact on the economy. One question, and I'm going to read it, and then I'll tell you how I'm going to answer it. I have assets of approximately X in my brokerage account. About 3 weeks ago, I became uncomfortable with the markets and required that my broker sell all but one of my equities. My broker was not happy with my decision, but I simply don't trust financial advisors to know what's happening. They certainly do not get the 2007 collapse correctly. I also kept some bonds. So now I have all this cash sitting in my brokerage account. If and when the markets collapse, is that money safe? Should I be able to get the money out? Will inflation or deflation set in? My cash is in my money market account and CDs, no treasury bills. If this collapse happens, is inflation or deflation likely to happen? Some economists like Harry Dent say deflation, other inflation. What is your take on this? I don't feel comfortable with buying gold. Is there a place on your site that gives specific financial advice on what to do with one's portfolio? If so, I don't see it. Where do you recommend I park my money for now until the storm blows over? There are several things on the site that could help address this, including the video investment strategies for changing times. But here's what I'm going to do, because the answer to this is going to take a little bit of time. I can't give investment advice on the Solari Report as a result of very strong legal advice from my attorney. But what I can do is I can cover options and pros and cons of the different options. And what I'll do, because this is complicated and will take a fairly lengthy answer, I will add this question to my first quarter equity overview in the first week of March. So we'll spend a fair amount of time on it, and I'll go through this in detail. And I have to thank you for the question, because I think a lot of people are feeling this sort of tension. Let's go to the movies. I posted the trailer for the PBS documentary Tesla, Master of Lighting. It's, if you don't know the story of Nikola Tesla, it's one you absolutely want to know. And PBS did a fairly good job. There's some other great documentaries, so if you're interested, you can go read more. And there's also a movie that we used once in Let's Go to the Movies. Interview. The net line on breakthrough energy is, I don't think it's about to cross the line into mainstream application. I think, as I said, our dependency on fossil fuel is very deep and long-lived. It's far from over. So I'm looking for the oil and gas price to head back up at some point. But I do think breakthrough energy exists. I think there's, if you look at what's being used in the spaceships, if you look at what's being used in the underground bases, they're not fueling at Exxon. So I don't think they're, you know, I think we're watching major applications on this planet that are breakthrough energy and not fossil fuel. So, but at some point that they're going to come across the line, and I don't, you know, it could happen tomorrow, it could happen in 20 years, it could happen in 100 years. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's something I watch pretty carefully. But I do believe that exists. And, you know, one of the things that most interests me, as I talked about in the wrap-up, if you look at what's happening with equity markets around the world, if you think that equity markets have moved up by central banks printing and quantitative easing, wait till you see what happens if breakthrough energy should happen. If that ever comes across the line, true, it's going to mark down the enormous fossil fuel infrastructure, but it also has the potential to send the S&P up to, you know, 30,000 or some ridiculous number. So the swing is very, very wide, depending on what happens. But again, I think our dependency on fossil fuel is going to continue for some time. But it's a great interview with Joel Garvin, who's an industrial scientist and really knows his stuff. And I think you'll enjoy listening to it. Joel Garvin on Breakthrough Energy. Okay, that's it. Next week, wonderful interview with Bill Bergman, Financial Transparency, one of the most important solutions. I love this topic. But it's hard for me to get people excited about financial transparency. I don't know why. I think there's a Mr. Global has a real force field up, because this is the thing. If anything can break through, this can absolutely break through. March 5th, I'll be back with the first quarter equity report. We'll be talking about global valuations, and I'll talk about that wonderful question about portfolio strategy. And then March 12th, Franklin Sanders comes back for our precious metals market report. So we've got great lineup until February 26th. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.